Hello everyone, welcome to the Defense Lines, Hungary's first podcast on the control functions in banking, insurance and corporate sectors. My name is András Bácsfalvi and I'm your host for the show that brings you real value and hands-on takeaways from the field of compliance, anti-money laundering, IT security, fraud prevention, risk management and internal audit. In order to achieve these ambitious goals, I'm gonna be joined by my colleagues who are not just the best in what they do, but they also have inspiring personalities that helps them through their journey of their professional lives. My today's guest is Christian Ducu. Christian is president of the European Ethics and Compliance Association and senior expert in governance, ethics, compliance and sustainability at the Center for Advanced Research in Management and Applied Ethics. He has worked as an ethics and compliance external consultant since 2007, collaborating with a wide range of organizations and industries. Since 2009, he has also worked as an external non-financial auditor, focusing on anti-corruption, sustainability and business integrity. Christian serves as president of the Ethics Commission of Romanian National Association of Insurance and Reinsurance Organizations and of the Supervising Commission of Romanian Transparency Registry Association, an industry organization for public affairs companies and professionals that manages a local instrument similar to the Transparency Registry from the European Commission. Hello, Christian. Welcome to the Defense Lines.
Thank you for having me.
Among many other places, you worked also for Transparency International. Some might say that they are just a tool in George Soros' hand, who just wants to manipulate public opinion and rule the world secretly through NGOs. What is your reaction to these accusations?
To be honest, I think it is not only naive, but it shows that people can be manipulated so easily and they don't check the facts. The most important element here is the money involved in supporting not only transparency but all NGOs in the region, in the Central and Eastern Europe. So a lot of people accuse on transparency in particular all NGOs for taking money from Mr. Soros. In my opinion, the impact of those funding schemes that he financed in the past is not mainly. It is positive entirely because a lot of people managed to build strong organizations to fight corruption, to fight those who oppose rule of law, those who want to take advantage of the government, of the public positions they held. And also those money that he poured into the region helped a lot of people develop their professional careers. So when I hear this type of accusation, I think the people who makes such allegations are really, they don't know what they are talking about. They don't make any elementary research to understand what an NGO does and what Transparency International managed to do in the past 2 decades. But at the same time, I think there is something that forces people to believe such accusations. This idea that a stranger is financing the NGOs from our country to oppose our values. And a lot of people thought that George Soros is trying to instill in these NGOs some strange values, which is, again, it's completely insane. Democracy, rule of law, transparency, and all the other values that we really try to keep them at the highest level and to promote them in all our activities, not some strange values. They are part of our society, and we should not treat democracy or transparency as a strange value, as something that it's forced upon us.
I used to work for a state-owned financial institution back in 2013, and in that time, as a compliance officer, it was evident for me to work with TI against corruption, and it was quite an achievement for me when they when they finally said, I mean TI, that we did well and we operated in one of the most transparent way among state-owned companies. I was really proud of this result, and as I recall, so was my CEO. What has changed since then? Why can't NGOs like TI work successfully with governments or state-owned companies against corruption, which is something that should bother everyone?
There are many things that changed in the past years. But before I get into that, I want to make a brief note here. I'm not trying to talk like a defender of Transparency International. I have my own reservations regarding Transparency International. Transparency International went through some very difficult times in terms of general conduct. I don't want to get into that, but I think Transparency International had its own internal problems that they had to deal with. And until now, they didn't manage to do that. And I hope they will be able to do that in the future, in the near future. But even so, I still have my doubts about Transparency International. Now, going back to your question, what changed? First of all, the civil society at large has been hit hard by illiberal media, by illiberal politicians who made a lot of allegations without showing any evidence for their allegations. And this eroded the general trust in NGOs. In other words, NGOs are no longer seen as a watchdog for democracy, for transparency, for integrity in business, but rather as a tool that can be used only in very specific circumstances. The second thing that we have to look at is the fact that the NGOs have been affected by the decreasing funds available at their disposal. In other words, the NGOs had to face a period of uncertainty, and many professionals left NGOs and the other organizations for better jobs, either in private or in the public sector. And these NGOs were left, this happened in Romania in particular, they were left without the manpower to do research, to look at the legislation that was proposed by the government. Their capacity to work on all the issues they used to have on their agenda, this capacity was diminished. And for many companies, this meant that they were no longer able to have a partner that provides what they need. There's a third element. In the past decade, the level of regulatory burden has increased exponentially. And many governments issued laws and secondary legislation in a rhythm that was above the capacity of the NGOs. In other words, the NGOs were no longer capable of keeping up with all the proposals. And this made NGOs to look unable to fulfill their objective. And a fourth element, it relates to, again, to that general trust. When you have so many allegations, so many people accusing NGO members of various bogus things, then not only the general public or the government feel that they should not trust the NGOs, but also the companies. And in some contexts, I have heard of companies that refuse to work with NGOs because they felt that the members of these NGOs are not trustworthy. In a general sense, and this is something that should make us all think twice about the role of NGOs and why we need to provide funding, why we need to help NGOs develop on long term and not on short term, why we need to put more money into research. For instance, in Romania, a lot of people think that NGOs are not doing research or they are not doing qualitative research. just, you know, rudimentary work, which is kind of strange. When you look at all the reports issued by various NGOs, you see not only sound methodology, but also logic, valid arguments with a lot of support for their content, which is not the case in many other areas, like, for instance, academic research. The academic research in Eastern Europe decreased in terms of quality. So we should be more careful with NGOs, in my opinion.
Talking about corruption, media is full of news about Uber's misconduct. Though our listeners are pretty well informed, could you please sum up the essence of the scandal they were involved in? What did they do wrong, and how come they could do it for so many years?
First of all, we should look not at this particular scandal, because this is not a scandal that happened yesterday. It's not something that we can pinpoint in their history. And then we can say, no, it happened only in that particular year. It is a business model that has been built on misconduct. If you remember, a couple of years ago, their CEO was accused of harassment.
Yeah, sure.
Of systematic harassment and of instilling in the company a high appetite for risk. And what we have seen in the news these days was just a proof of those accusations and many other things that were built on a particular type or on a particular profile of an organization. An organization that doesn't care about its own people, because the CEO himself didn't care about people. An organization built on high risk, because the CEO was a person that was enjoying high risk. And when you look at that, you'll see a lot of misbehavior that is related to those two elements. And what we learned from the scandals was that they didn't care about their employees, not only in Europe or in the US. Everywhere they had operations. For instance, in South Africa, they didn't care about the fact that their drivers were subjected to violence, that their drivers were permanently in danger of being hurt by their clients. This was a very strange thing, but again, if you look at how Uber entered the European market, you won't have to wonder about that, because when Uber made its first steps in Europe, everything started with huge protests from the taxi drivers in France, in the UK, and everybody was accusing Uber of toxic practices that were affecting a different industry or a different part of their industry. So they didn't care about the fact that they were affecting the taxi drivers that working legally in those countries. All they cared was to make money. And to do that, they had to lobby politicians to change the legislation. And again, these materials that were published by the investigative journalists revealed all sorts of illegal practices in lobbying. And not only in lobbying, let's take the case of Uber Romania. The CEO of Uber Romania is the daughter of a guy who worked in the public sector with a lot of influence. And this guy worked for Uber as a middleman, and he provided access to politicians, to various politicians. And what we see in those conversations that were published in the news is very, let's not say illegal, because we have to be careful with that, but we see unethical practices. We see a lot of toxic connections, not only with politicians, but also with politically exposed people in other intermediaries. We see a lot of close contacts with those people. So this is another aspect. Then we have other business aspects. For instance, they created a mechanism in their servers to make impossible to any law enforcement agency to gather information from their servers for investigations. This idea of a kill switch that could interrupt suddenly the connection between the local server and the data, or to delete the data, sensitive data. This is again a proof of their toxic business practices. And only for that, in my opinion, they should be investigated by not only Romanian authorities or French authorities, but the European Commission. And the European Commission should take all the necessary measures to prevent in the future something similar. And there are many other aspects that we don't have time to discuss now. But in general, I would say that it's not about particular misconduct. It's about a business model that is toxic, a business model that is built on misconduct.
And what and how can we do better to prevent such scandals? Because, you know, there are always scandals like this. And we always we are full of hopes and big words that we gonna prevent the next one. But nothing changes. So what can we do to make this work better?
Let me rephrase it. I had a meeting once with a CEO, and he asked me, "Tell me one thing that I can do to change, to make things better, as you say. One thing, just one thing." Now, when you were asking me your question, I was thinking about the same thing. Uber, the current Uber CEO, pleads forgiveness. Pleads for the idea that we should trust Uber now because they changed their business model. And we need to trust them because they changed, but without showing any proof. There's no magic solution. There are many steps that we should take in order to avoid in the future similar events. And this prevention starts today, or should start today, with one basic thing. Law enforcement agencies to do their job and investigate the proofs shown by the media. Uber must become the subject of a prosecution. Not only in Romania, South Africa, US or France, but first of all at the European Union level, and then in all the other countries. Uber, in its current form or in the future form, has to pay for their misconduct. This is the very first step that we have to make. Secondly, we have to make sure that the current legislation provides the right conditions for correct lobbying. We have to make sure that politicians are no longer able to become agents of influence for companies like Uber and Facebook and Gazprom or any other rogue entity. So it's not only about Uber, in my opinion. It is something that has to do with the way lobby is done in Europe.
Maybe we need a lobby law or lobby.
We need
regulation or something.
We need a framework for.
Framework, yeah.
A framework that, first of all, is focused on transparency in the decision making, governmental level or parliamental level. Then we need a law for lobby, if you want, or for public affairs in general. We need laws that deal with the right to petition. There are many elements that should come into this framework, but the current status quo is no longer, let's say, it's no longer providing the right means for pursuing the public interest, let's say this way. So there are many things that we have to do to prevent in the future similar cases. And another thing is to make sure that people like CEO of Uber doesn't have too much power. And we have to make sure that CEOs with this kind of appetite to risk not drawing their companies into scandals. In 2001, when the entire world learned about Enron, the US government decided to do something about that. And they did something, but it was insufficient to protect companies from this type of managers. Sarbanes-Oxley Act and that section on the responsibility of the CEO was not sufficiently developed. And we have to do something similar and even stronger in Europe. We have to make sure that these rogue CEOs pay for their actions. And not only that they pay for their actions, that they will not be able to destroy their companies or destroy the reputation of their companies and so forth. If you look at the case of Elon Musk, the law doesn't provide sufficient means to exclude Elon Musk from decision making for its absurd or naive tweets.
He keeps abusing market.
He keeps abusing the market. He keeps affecting the value of his company with childish tweets.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
And we have to protect the companies from this type of people.
Yeah. And what are the key challenges related to corruption that we will face in the future? Does the European Ethics and Compliance Association have a proper program or some kind of best practice collection to help governments or even the market to evolve in the fight against corruption or unethical behavior?
To start with the second question, we don't have best practice collection. We have the expertise of our members and we have a network, an extended network of professionals, but we don't have anything that comes close to a best practice collection. Why? Because there are many, many best practice collections regarding anti-corruption, and coming up with a new one, it will not make a difference. We have a lot of best practices. We have a lot of reports, surveys, and guidelines, but what we really lack is this close work with the government to fight corruption, to prevent corruption and unethical behavior. And let's say our main objective, it is to make decision makers aware of what role ethics plays in the business sector, in the public sector, and to focus not only on the legal aspects, but also on the ethical aspects. Because what we have experienced in the past decade or so is that a lot of people with background in legal studies refuse to understand the implications of unethical behavior. They refuse to understand the relationship between ethics and law. And too many people think that we should restrict our approach to what they call either legal compliance or legalism or legal norms. And in our opinion, this is the mistake that we have been practicing in the past 40, 50 years. And we continue to practice it because we refuse to understand that our behavior as humans, as organizations, has a very important part that we call the ethical side of our behavior. And everything starts from this part. Then we have the professional part, where professional conduct can be normed, can have a standard associated with. Then we have the legal part, and then we have other elements. But everything should start with the ethical approach of organizational behavior in this particular case. And we are working hard to convince the governments, to convince civil servants that their approach should start from the same point. In the future, the key challenges, in my opinion, will be to, first of all, to prosecute more the corrupt people and to cover more with strong institutions the toxic business practices that are today restricted, that are today boxed under this label unethical misconduct. For instance, the European Union is working now hard to make human rights in the supply chain an important or a key element of any business practice. In other words, the European Union is trying to create norms that cover more and more the territory that was until yesterday included in, let's say, ethics in the supply chain or sustainability or corporate social responsibility, and it didn't have a legal norm associated. In other words, we have to build a legal framework that strengthens the ethical side of those business practices that deal with child labor, with forced labor, with many other elements from this area. And not only European Union is interested in this, also the American government adopted an act that it is related to the Uyghur minority, which is used in forced labor camps. And the American government said that they don't want to see American companies buying goods from Chinese companies that use Uyghur forced labor. And this is in the same direction.
As per the last question, allow me to change the subject and to ask you about ESG. As a compliance officer and as an eco-conscious citizen, I found this topic extremely interesting and also very important. Is this something that will determine our future, or is it just another poor attempt to pretend protecting our environment like greenwashing?
First of all, it is a trendy label. Everybody talks about ESG now. Everybody talks about how important ESG is. In reality, ESG exists since the 80s, the early 90s, and it used to be an important part of investment decisions, especially investment decisions in parts of the world that were, let's say, on our watch list, on the civil society watch list. But today, ESG is no longer about that. ESG has become the trendy thing that every company should hold on to prove that they are interested in what we generally call sustainability. It is a label that is empty of content. In my opinion, they are using this label to wash their reputation.
So now it is used again as a cover?
It's a cover. It's a tool to clean their reputation.
I see.
But without really investing in environmental protection, in decreasing the social impact, on changing the governance, for instance, of their supply chain. A couple of years ago, we saw a change from corporate social responsibility to sustainability. Before that, there was a similar change from corporate social responsibility to share value, to corporate citizenship, and many other similar labels. ESG is a new label in that huge list of labels that we invented in the past 40 years to refer to the same thing, to the responsibility of a company, or let's say an organization in general, for the way it's doing business. Not only here locally, but on the entirety of its value chain. From the farmer that produces, I don't know, let's say coffee, to the bottle that held our product and now ended up in a waste deposit. So we should be more focused on responsibility, on the idea of integrating this responsibility or integrated responsibility, and not on ESG. For instance, I want to make clear this, why I say that ESG is an empty label. ESG doesn't say anything about sustainable products. It doesn't say how a company should reflect on its product from not only an environment or social perspective, but also from other perspectives, from other approaches. And I want to emphasize that if we focus on sustainable products, for instance, on sustainability, we will also be more focused on innovation. I have one simple example. Let's talk about Tonelis, about the company, the German company that was using workers from the Eastern Europe like slaves, with intermediaries, and all these workers were living in very poor conditions. They were paid very bad. They never thought about changing their business practice until there was a huge scandal and the government took measures against the company. If we change the approach and we will look at from an innovation angle, it's not only about the workers, intermediaries, it's also about the place where we work. It's about the way we work. It's about the way that half pig or that animal ends up in our butcheries and how our workers have contact with the animal. It's not only about that, it's about the small elements related to transportation, related to family contact, related to all year round work. When your business is focused on 3 months of hard work from an Eastern European who will gladly accept 1,000 euro for the work that a German worker would never do because he will ask for 3,000 or 4,000 euros, then there's something wrong with your business model. And changing the angle, it means that you have to be closer to your worker. You have to help your worker be available not only 3 months, but be available 12 months, an entire year, and to build the trust connection with him or with her, and to build a community of workers, to invest in kindergartens for their children, and not only rely on this social aspect that makes the worker vulnerable. And this discussion can lead us to many other aspects, but let's say for the moment people got the idea that we need to change the approach.
Yeah, so there's much work to be done yet, I guess. We are at just the very beginning of the road.
Yes, indeed. And I think we have to do more, not only in terms of business corporate governance, but we also have to do more in terms of training our colleagues from the business sector to be able to understand all these aspects. What I have seen in the past 20 years is decreasing interest in reading, in self-advancement, if you want. More and more people that work in the business sector are overloaded with job-related tasks, and they don't have the time to train better, to improve the quality of their work, to be ready to innovate at work. And probably we have to change this as well.
Christian, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Thanks for joining me today. You have just listened to The Defense Lines, the podcast for the control functions. If you found value in this episode, please subscribe so you will never miss a show. András Bácsfabi is signing off, but till our next meeting, do not forget, those who try to convince you that safety can be increased only by jeopardizing your business goals will eventually deprive you of both.